Welcome to the Hall of Blue Illumination, the podcast dedicated to M.A.R. Barker's legendary world of Tecumel. Here we are once again, episode 3, The Hall of Blue Illumination. We'll start with continuing our discussion with James about how he puts together his Empire of the Petal Throne campaigns and progress into a convention recap. With me today are Victor Raymond.
Hi there.
And James Malachewski.
Hello.
Victor, I understand you have a few questions for James.
Yes. So, James, you've been running games on Google Hangouts now for quite some time.
Yes.
And that provided you with the experience to put together your campaigns for Tecumel, because you have a group of players that's kind of scattered all over the place. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. What specifically are you interested in, I guess?
Yeah, just a little bit about, you know, how you brought the group together.
Oh, I see.
You know,
what did
Google Hangouts provide to you that made it easier for you to do this?
Sure. Well, the thing is, you know, I'd been on Google Plus, sort of, you know, Google's social media platform for quite a few years, and have a lot of friends and acquaintances there that are interested in, you know, role-playing games generally. So I already had a ready pool of people who were interested in, you know, similar kinds of things. So when I decided I wanted to run Empire of the Petal Throne, I just made a post to everyone in my circles saying that I was interested in doing this. I was going to use the original 1975 rules and that I wanted to run it at a particular time and date. And I saw, you know, what sort of response I got from that and sort of went from there. In the case of the first campaign that I run, the longer running of the two, set in Socotis, that was an easier process of sort of whittling down or getting people, simply because it's during the day, which necessarily meant that a lot of people whose schedules wouldn't allow them to, you know, because they're at work or whatever, wouldn't allow that. On the other hand, it meant that I got a number of people who were in Europe, because, of course, since it's in the afternoon North American time, it was evening for them. So that was sort of how that happened. I basically did the same thing with my second campaign, the one set in Mughalav Yah. And that was a slightly harder thing, simply because there were a lot more people free. And in each case, I had a very large pool of people who were interested. And then sort of over time, it settled into a smaller group of people who were able to regularly commit to keep playing. And you know, I found it very, very, very good. I mean, Google Plus is terrific because it, in addition to just having this pool of people that I already could draw upon, I created a community for each of the campaigns, which is sort of a, you know, a separate sort of circle, I guess, or whatever. It's a repository for all the sort of campaign information. So the players can post their characters. Whenever a session is done, I can indicate what sort of things they may have acquired, dole out experience points. We can discuss things during the week about what's going to happen in the next session. And then I have a pinned post that consists of all the names of the characters, the NPCs whom they've met over the course of the sessions, and, you know, what their clans are, their base description of them, just sort of information of that sort, because, you know, after a while, you accumulate a large number of these personalities, and sometimes even I find it hard to keep track of them. So the tools have been really terrific for that. And then, of course, there's the Hangouts themselves, which is a sort of a video chat system that you can schedule. So, you know, every week, you know, we play and we can see one another. So it's closer to being at the same table. Not quite the same, but it's still, I find it personally more enjoyable than, say, just purely the voice. It helps when you can see people's faces and their reactions to things. It gives it a, as I say, it's a closer experience to being at the table. But I found it really terrific. I mean, the Socotus campaign has been going on for about 20 months now, I guess, something like that, of weekly sessions. And it's been very, very successful. And the Mughlabjani campaign is less so, about 10 months, something like that. But it's been terrific.
10 months.
I'd like to make an observation as a player in the Hangouts game, for starters, but also as someone who has run a campaign on Roll20.net. So some people may be wondering, what is the difference between Roll20.net and Hangouts?
That would be me.
Yeah, yeah. I've never used Roll20 either.
I used a very early version of Roll20, and I have no idea what it looks like now. So go ahead.
So Roll20 is an amazing service. It's a premium service. You pay a certain amount a month. And if you're into a game that requires people to have their character sheets within the computer environment, and for you to roll dice, and for you to have tactical maps, and handouts, and soundtracks, and all these kinds of things, then Roll20 is for you. However, once I started playing on Hangouts with James, I immediately saw that all the extra stuff that Roll20 does is really not very useful to the kind of game that I'm interested in playing, which doesn't really need any of those things. Mm-hmm. And there's this conception of, well, how do you roll dice if you can't see the dice? And that's not really been a problem with us. I mean, there is a dice app in Hangouts. But also, at the same time, we're adults. If you want to roll a D20 on a table and tell us what it is, it's like, whatever you say it is, it is.
Yes, yes.
Another 20. How amazing.
Hey, it could happen.
It can happen.
But then your character will die the next round.
That's true. It's amazing.
Being punished by the gods for his overwhelming success in battle.
That's right. Such luck must be rewarded. Absolutely.
So anyway, Roll20, you know, it's great if you're playing the kind of game that needs those sorts of things. But if it's really, I hesitate to call it an old school game because I don't think there's anything old about it. But a game where it's mostly narrative, then you don't need all the extra stuff.
Yeah, the only slight drawback I have experienced with Hangouts is that when you are doing something that involves, you know, something like a dungeon, you know, when you're going in the underworld or whatever, it is helpful to have some kind of a means of showing what the map looks like without, I mean, I describe it usually. And again, we're blessed in our particular case because we have a cartographer with us in our group, a very good one. So that's terrific. So, you know, he can draw it out and say, is this what it looks like? And I can say yes or no. But that's not always the case. So it would be great if there were some kind of a means of dealing with that. But it's a relatively minor complaint.
Well, see, that's one of the things that Roll20 does very well, is you can either create your map on the computer or scan it in, and then have the whole thing blocked out with what they call fog of war, and then reveal it as it is explored.
That would be cool.
Yeah, and that sort of thing I think could be very useful for a Tecumel referee who wanted to have that as part of the game experience when they if they were meeting with their players in, you know, in a Google Hangout situation. I think one of the challenges that a lot of fans of Tecumel report to me is that they don't always have other Tecumel fans nearby. And so for them, the idea of having Google Hangouts as an option makes it easier to find one another.
Yes.
And I think that's great.
Well, sure. I mean, like our the Friday group consists of players in the United States, Canada, the UK, and France. So that's you know, it's and even within the North American group, I mean, we're not all physically in the same location. So it's really terrific and helpful that way. So I highly recommend it.
I think it's hilarious how state-of-the-art technology is used to facilitate a game that's completely analog.
Yes.
That really thrills me in this day and age of, you know, photorealistic 3D games.
Well, and I think that it's actually led to something of a renaissance of role-playing for a lot of people.
Oh, definitely.
They have either friends that have flown to the four winds after college, or they've found that the people interested in what they're interested in just are in different places or whatever. But this whole situation of Google Hangouts and Roll20 and other sort of technologically mediated meeting spaces, I think is great. That having been said, I will say that I think that there's real value in building games to introduce TechML to new people, and new people not just online, but new people face-to-face.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And one of the things about this, and I wanted to ask James about this, was how much attention is there paid to TechML in, say, you know, the area that you're at? I mean, have you found any other fans in Toronto that...
No, I've run Empire of the Petal Throne events at local conventions, and I've always got a good number of people who've come to play, you know, usually 6 to 8 players for most, 4-hour slots. And in each case, at least the most recent ones, it's always, oh, I've heard about this game for a long time, or I remember this game from way back, but I never had a chance to play it, or I played it once a long time ago, that kind of a thing. But I don't think there's not a really big presence locally here that I'm familiar with. I mean, I can also tell you, too, from working on my zine and sending out copies of it, one of the things I like is I hand address everything, so it's nice, so I get to see where they're all going. And there's nobody around locally. I mean, there's a couple. I'm sorry, it's not just nobody. There are a handful of people locally who are interested in it. But I find that the centers of TechML interest are elsewhere.
Are the local people that you know?
A few of them, but some of them no. Huh. Some of them no. In one case, there's a fellow who lives actually not that far away from me, and I've never met him, nor did I even know of his existence until relatively recently, which is interesting.
You know, in early science fiction fandom, this is how people found one another to start science fiction clubs.
Yep.
They would read science fiction magazines and then look at the letters columns to see who was nearby.
Mm-hmm.
And this was an earlier, more innocent age where the idea of sending someone a letter and saying, I understand that you're interested in the same things I am, and we live in the same city or town or wherever,
mm-hmm.
and we should get together and do something. That's what people would do.
Oh, yeah, Google Plus group is almost the same thing in a different way.
It allows...
Maybe geographically disperse, but it certainly allows people to converse on topics of interest.
Absolutely. And that's one of the reasons why I think it's great. In my own experience with my game club in Madison, Wisconsin, we have 50 to 60 people showing up on Tuesday nights at a local game store in the gaming space that they have adjacent to the retail space. And we have about 8 games going any given Tuesday night.
That's amazing.
And I've ended up getting some inquiries. I've run the Empire of the Petal Throne before for that group, And it's interesting because since it's an open table format and we have regular turnover, that is to say, we have games switching up every 3 to 4 months. So people can sit down at a table and play and then go and do something else after they've played through that stint, that sort of adventure arc. And I found that some people really enjoy it, and others are... It's not necessarily an environment that allows for a lot of getting really deeply into it unless they want to commit to it personally. And so I found that it's a great environment for playing some games, but Empire of the Petal Throne needs to have a little more, I don't know, space. And maybe that's reflected in how people find one another. And I'm not really being very clear here.
This notion of space is interesting. Can you speak more about that?
I think part of it is that when you're at an open club space where people are playing literally anything, we've had games, you know, the range of games any particular time goes from GURPS to Bushido to AD&D Second Edition to Swords and Wizardry. People are showing up to game, but they are not necessarily showing up to game a specific game. I mean, they may look for something, but they're just saying, hey, I want to role play. What have you got?
Yeah.
And when I say space, Techamel is a game setting that wants to have a lot of room to show itself off, is I guess what I'm thinking. You know, everything from the world is so richly detailed to how characters interact with one another. And it's in its own way more than just a hack and slash game. I mean, you can play it that way, but it ends up being something that requires a little more attention, a little bit more thoughtfulness, or at least seems to me. And I think that's both part of its appeal and to some extent perhaps some of the limit to its appeal is that people need that space in order to experience that. And when you've got 8 tables cheek by jowl, it's a little harder to sort of bring that out.
No, I know what you mean by that, actually. One of the difficulties I've always had in running convention games locally is that I wonder sometimes, I sort of fret over how best to present Empire of the Petal Throne in a way that is both enjoyable as a convention offering while at the same time sort of showing off what makes Techamel a different, a unique and interesting setting in which to role play. And even in a 4-hour slot, that's hard to do. Are harder to do, I guess. As you say, as a setting, it sort of demands a bit more space. I get what you mean by that. Because the thing is, I think, you know, I had run Techamel campaigns before in the past, but the two that I'm currently running, particularly the Socatus one, is probably the most successful. And the reason I think that is because it's been it's a very broad sort of a campaign. It's not been focused on any one particular thing. The characters have had a chance to sort of wander quite widely. They've got involved in a whole bunch of different activities, ranging from sort of, you know, exploring the underworld to sort of political machinations to exploration and so forth and so on. And I think for me, and again, I've been interested in Techamel for a long time. It feels the most true, I guess. Not true, maybe that's not the word I'm looking for, but I feel like I finally really done it the most justice because it's given it, I've had the chance, had the opportunity to, you know, explore all these different facets. And in a way, I don't want to deny that you can sort of play Techamel in a more focused way and that that's wrong or anything, but somehow, you know, when you were saying that you need this space, it sort of, a little light went on. I was like, yeah, I get it. I understand what you mean by that. It really feels more like Techamel when you actually have the chance to sort of spread out.
So with regard to your players, a few of the players came to the campaign being very knowledgeable in the setting and its associated game systems, but I'd say the lion's share of them do not have that experience. Do you find that people have learned more about the setting in-game, or have they gone off and done their own research and then come back more knowledgeable, or it's more likely that it's a combination of those two things?
I think most of the learning that has occurred in between the two campaigns has occurred in play more so than outside of it. With the exception of people who I think were already quite knowledgeable about Takemel and interested in it. I don't remember any cases where anyone said, I was sitting down the other day and reading, the Swords and Glory Takemel source book, or, the Book of the Bindings or whatever. The only people who do that are like us for the most part. it's true. It is that way. And, I'm kind of glad of that in a certain sense, just because I really do enjoy introducing new elements of the setting to people, even people who become quite knowledgeable about it through play, because I think that's sort of the best way to experience Takemel is through play, is experiencing it as if you were there rather than simply reading about it. And that's been especially the Mughlabjani campaign is made up almost entirely of neophytes to Takemel. And moreover, since it's set in Mughlabja, even if they were people who knew something about Takemel and were familiar with Sulyanu or whatever, it's a different culture, different environment. The situation isn't exactly analogous to anything that's going on. So I've watched them over the course of the sessions we played the last 10 months or whatever. And, they're getting it. They're starting to think through their character, like their characters, who are Mughlabjani, who have these notions about things now that they don't know any other ways of looking at Takemel yet. They occasionally will encounter people who are from some other culture. And then they'll be like, oh, that's strange. I didn't know that there were other ways of looking at it. Because to them, the Mughlabjani viewpoint is the way to experience Takemel. So it's a funny thing.
I love that. It's the cultural relativism is
absolutely. Well, the same thing. The same thing.
Differently.
That's happened in the Socrates campaign on numerous occasions, because those characters have wandered much more widely, and a large stretch of the campaign involved them coming back home after a mishap that led them into Yon Kor. So they encounter different ways of doing things and looking at things. And I can't tell you how pleasurable it is as a referee to watch the characters sort of look down their noses at, oh, these Sa'alakiani and the weird ways they do things. They're barbarians. That's true. Great. I find that delightful.
So you've had the luxury via Hangouts of running what have become enduring campaigns, which is got to be contrasted by how one would run a one-shot at a convention. So, I mean, that's a place where one would think there wasn't a whole lot of space to let things unfold. So Victor has recently run several sessions at two different conventions. Victor, would you like to chat about that a bit?
Sure. I just got back from UConn Gaming Convention in Michigan, and 1 week before that, I was at GameholeCon here in Madison, Wisconsin. And GameholeCon had, let's see here, something upwards of 2,400 people at it. Might have been higher. I'd have to go back.
Wow, and that's a good number.
Yes, it has grown. It is in its fourth year, and it has grown by leaps and bounds. I've watched it because I've been to every single one of them. And Alex Kammer, who is the fellow in charge of GameholeCon, has done a great job. He's assembled a really amazing team of people and has created this wonderful experience through over 3 days. And there's old school games, there's new games, there's what is it, live D&D. There's all sorts of stuff going on, board games, miniatures, you name it. It is a really amazing convention and well worth going to. In contrast, you have UConn Gaming Convention, which is, it has been around for a very long time, and it has was started as the annual convention for the student organization at University of Michigan, and I now think is independent. And it has a somewhat smaller attendance, as far as I know. I could be wrong about that. But it has also been the home for over a decade, in fact, I think close to two decades now, of the Tech-ML track, which is probably the longest running continuous Tech-ML gaming opportunity at a convention that you can find in North America. So two very different environments. One, a new convention with new players, and the other, a convention that's been around a long time and is sort of a meeting ground for people who are really into the world of Empire of the Petal Throne.
Did you run the same events at both cons?
I did, and it was kind of interesting.
How would you characterize the experience from your side of the screen with the player mix that you would get at a place that the Game Hole, for example, may not have widespread recognition of Tech-ML and its, you know, the whole world that goes along with that, and whereas UConn obviously is a bastion of this sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. The Game Hole con attendees were exactly that. They were new to Tech-ML. They had not experienced it before, generally speaking. In each of my games, I had at least one player who had some familiarity with the world. In a couple of cases, I had people who had been in my games before elsewhere. And so they had signed up specifically because they knew that they were going to have a good time playing Tech-ML with me, which was great. But there were also, in every game session, in fact, the majority of people in each game session were people that were new. And that was a real challenge. I ran three events, one of which was aimed at high-level characters that were delving deep into the Jakalan underworld. Another adventure that was aimed at players who were new, fresh off the boat, so their characters were like those starting in a campaign. And the third adventure was for characters that were from the same clan, whose players probably had a little bit of familiarity with Tech-ML, and they were trying to solve a mystery as they were on a ship proceeding up the Musuma River from Jakala to Baisu.
So did you find that the high-level play was, did it have more people who were already in the know about the setting, or was it still just as many people who you were kind of bringing on board in that moment?
Still just as many that I was bringing on board.
Well, and how did it go? Did you see the thing that I ask this because I have introduced Empire of the Petal Throne to several different groups over, you know, a long period of time, and I try not to do too much explaining. Like, I don't want to get off on a tangent explaining some cultural detail if I don't have to, and try and demonstrate by actions, by description, by events what should be done rather than kind of getting off into lecture space.
Mm-hmm. I found that what I needed to do was to spend a little bit of time at the beginning of each game session sort of explaining some really basic details about Tech-ML to the people who were unfamiliar with it. I had taken some time ahead of time to produce pre-generated characters that had some background to them, so they had some idea of who they were, a little bit about what their profession was, because I was using the 1975 rules with some house rule modifications. And I also included a little bit about religion, so they had some idea of why did their character worship who they worshipped, and so on and so forth. And in so doing, that, along with whatever race they were, most of them were human, but I had a few non-humans, the players quickly developed a sense of kind of who they were as characters. And so for the Fresh Off the Boat game and for the high level game, those were actually relatively easy because the players were either completely new to the setting, and so they were all very much like their characters. Like, I don't know what's going to happen. Oh my God, what are they going to do? You know, what's going on here? And what do we need to pay attention to? And that made it really easy for me as a GM to say, well, you should pay attention to these things because, you know, not even telling them that they should pay attention. This is what's in your face. This is what's going on. And for the high level game, these characters are powerful. They have spells and magical items and things that they could use to make things happen. So because they had a lot more freedom to do things, they could sit back and think a little bit about, okay, so what's my objective here as a character, and what am I trying to do to get there, right? So those two were fine. The one that was actually a little harder for people to get into was the one where they were from a medium level status background as characters, and they had a mission that was related to some of the knowledge that they would need about the world. So there had to be more explaining done for that game, and that meant that they were a little bit more hesitant about what they needed to do and how they needed to do it.
That makes total sense. Like, if you keep things more action oriented or isolated from too much subtle social nuance, then new players probably excel. Mm-hmm. But I think you need to know a certain amount about the setting to get more of the intricacies of the way different characters might interact, especially with non-player characters of varying status or allegiances and the like.
Right. And one of the things that this highlighted for me was that some of the things that make campaign play so enjoyable, some of the stuff that James has already talked about, is very difficult to bring about easily and quickly in a one-shot convention session. You can really get focused on about one specific aspect of the world to frame what is going to make the game interesting and exciting and different. I mean, I could be wrong about that. I mean, maybe there's people out there more talented than myself, but I find that there's really only about one thing, the sort of one framing device that you can bring in. You know, this game is about relationships between clans.
Right.
Okay, great. Or this game is going to be about a military expedition up into the hills in the Gilraya Forest, or, you know, and in each one of these games, you're going to be able to show off just a piece of what the world is. And I think that can be a little frustrating for Tecumel referees but I want to show it all, you know? And they don't realize, and you have to be done in 4 hours.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So reading the event descriptions for UConn, some of those events presumed that the players would be knowledgeable about the setting, especially with some of the newer rule sets, Baythorn, for example. I should think that someone who wanted to sign up for a game like that would already know a little bit about what's going on, but at a convention like UConn, that's to be expected, and it's part of the attraction of the event in the first place. What other cons are there nationally that have Tecumel represented?
Well, Con of the North is coming up in February, and that has a growing Tecumel track, which it's held in the Twin Cities, and it's I would say about the same size as Gamehole Con, but it's been around for a lot longer. And then, in addition to Con of the North, there is also Gary Con, which is held in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, and is dedicated to all things old school TSR and is run by Luke Gygax. And Luke has been very encouraging of Tecumel gaming and Empire of the Petal Throne and other games related to Tecumel at Gary Con, we're hoping to have more of a presence at GaryCon this year. We'll see how that turns out. Celesticon out on the West Coast, when it was being run, had some Tecmo games at it because of some Tecmo fans out there, notably Theron and Danielle Godot. Danielle was the one who wrote Choice of the Petal Throne, which we should talk about at some point. But
yeah, that's I enjoyed that. It's super fun.
It is really an amazing piece of work, and she deserves a lot of credit for it.
Thank you for listening to the Hall of Blue Illumination. You can email us your questions, queries, and other topics at citizen@techmlpodcast.com. You can also find TechMO Podcast on Twitter and Facebook. Until next time, take care and have fun playing in the world of TechMO.